You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
The monsoon may not be here yet, but it is certainly a season of trade wars, it appears. There is, of course, one going on between Uncle Sam and the Middle Kingdom. One funny fallout of China's ire is that import tariffs into China have been reduced for other countries besides the United States, even as the Huawei ban and other measures have gained momentum in that particular trade war. The extremely easily irritable Trump administration has decided, in all their wisdom, that another trade war won't pose a problem. This time round, with Apna Bharat, Mahan. It wasn't too long ago that the American president had expressed a desire that Harley-Davidson bikes be sold at much cheaper prices in Apna Desh. Snake charmers and maharajas zipping around on American-made Harley-Davidsons on cow-filled streets in front of the Taj Mahal is the ultimate globalization stereotype or a regrettable omission in a Coldplay video. In this latest salvo, Trump, according to a report by the New York Times, has announced he was revoking a preferential trade status for more than $5 billion in imports from India, a move that American officials had been considering for over a year. That prompted India to finally move forward with its own long-threatened tariffs. So that's right, India and the United States may be on the cusp of a whole new trade war, which is the topic of today's Digging Deeper with Money Control. Are India and the US going to be in a trade war? What is the fallout likely going to be? Will it trouble the H-1B visas? That is the biggest question Indians have about the situation. So we'll try and answer each of those on this edition of Digging Deeper with Money Control with me, Rakesh Sharma.
The Deep Dive podcast series.
US President Donald Trump, I still have difficulty saying it, and Prime Minister Narendra Modi are slated to meet at the G20 summit later this month. By the way, on his way to the G20 summit, Mr. Trump is probably going to be live tweeting the first Democratic primary race. That is how obsessed he is with the image of winning and how little interested he is in running his country and essentially the free world. But we won't expect much more from him. He is, after all, Donald Trump. I expect at the G20, though, there won't be the usual warm hugs. Trump has been meaning to take action on trade with India on account of the trade deficit. India sent goods worth around $54 billion to the US, but imported only $33 billion worth. So in layman's terms, what is the trade situation with these big countries like? China is the largest trading partner of India, but we have a negative trade balance with China, which means India's exports to China are lower than what China exports to India. So this trade is very favorable for China. In the case of the United States, India runs a trade surplus. India exports more than it imports. This brings much needed dollar inflows into the country. In fact, India ranks 9th on the list of trading partners that run a trade surplus with the United States. China, Mexico, and Japan lead the list, and even Vietnam runs a higher surplus against the US than India does, according to US government data. India is a minor exporter of two metals that President Trump announced tariffs on: steel and aluminium. Steel isn't technically a metal, I suppose it's an alloy. So steel and aluminium are the two goods that India exports to the United States, and now Mr. Trumpo has imposed tariffs on those two. Bloomberg estimates that India accounts for approximately 2% of US steel and aluminium imports. While the direct tariff impact on India will be minimal, global prices will likely remain under pressure. More importantly, if India's trade war with the United States escalates, it could widen our trade deficit. Now, that's a deficit Trump wants corrected in favor of the United States. A Money Control report explained that. Peeved at India not providing assurances on equitable and reasonable access for American products to India's vast market, effective on the 5th of June, Trump ended India's designation as a beneficiary developing country under this preference system called the Generalized System of Preferences, GSP. Under GSP, the US allows preferential duty-free entry for thousands of products from about 120-plus designated beneficiary countries. India is the largest beneficiary nation under the GSP and exported goods worth $6.35 billion to the United States. Unquote. Now, on the day it was announced was the first working day of the new Modi administration. Talk about needing to hit the ground running. It was also the day an Indian government report estimated that the country's economy was growing at the slowest rate in 5 years and that unemployment was at a 45-year peak. The new government had to put out several fires on day one, one of them coming from a rather orange missile. Less than amused with this latest move by Washington, India retaliated a few days ago with tariffs of its own. But first, the backstory to Trump's beef with India. Beef. Last year, Trump's decision, admittedly not aimed exclusively at India, was to end waivers to all 8 countries importing oil from Iran. Now, in November, the United States granted a 6-month waiver to India and 7 other countries to continue importing oil from Iran. That waiver ended last month. We spoke about it on one of our stories of the day. Now, following the ending of that waiver, India had to stop importing oil from Iran, which is the 3rd largest oil supplier to India after Iraq and Saudi Arabia. Now, Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif visited India just days after the US ended this waiver for India. Zarif's visit was intended to persuade India to continue importing oil from Iran. The External Affairs Ministry appears to have only blandly reiterated the position that a decision will be taken, keeping in mind commercial considerations and energy security by the new government after the general elections. You know, general bureaucratic blah blah. So far, the Indian government has not spoken negatively about American sanctions against Iran, and its approach appears to be in compliance with the sanctions, even though they harm India's interests and limit its autonomy. Furthermore, Money Control observed that the new government is unlikely to defy US sanctions by importing oil from Iran. For now, India, which imported 23.6 million tons of Iranian oil in FY2019, will fill the gaps left by Iranian oil with imports from other major oil-producing nations like Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Nigeria, and the United States. Indian refiners like IOC signed 2-term contracts for the import of crude from the US and with Norwegian oil company Equinor for buying 3 million tons of crude, as well as an agreement to buy 1.6 million tons from Algerian national oil company Sonatrach. Now, the second somewhat unexpected move in May, which is aimed specifically at India. Now, the other one that I spoke about, where the waiver was given to 8 countries, India was one of them, and the waiver ended when India had to stop importing oil from Iran and basically not have any trade negotiations or trade deals with Iran, because that was the requirement and the rule of Big Brother, that is the United States. So that is the number one move, which was not directly or specifically aimed at India. But in May came a rather specific move against India, which is likely to hurt India a bit. The main attraction of this GSP program that I spoke to you about, which is the Generalized System of Preferences, was that they were unilateral and non-reciprocal. The GSP program, which ostensibly was designed to help the so-called developing countries, also benefited US small businesses, as they could import materials from India without paying duties and keep the cost of finished consumer products in the US low. The US decision to remove India from the list of GSP beneficiaries could end up costing their businesses over $300 million in additional tariffs, according to one American estimate. So the first one regarding the Iranian oil was a general salvo that was issued to 8 different countries. But this particular one of removing India from the GSP program is certainly going to hurt a lot more. In retaliation to this, India announced on the 15th of June, just a few days ago, that it would raise tariffs on 28 categories of imports from the United States. The increased tariffs on goods worth $1.4 billion cover almonds, walnuts, apples, and finished metal items, among other products. Did you know that India is the market for almost 50% of American almonds? We get a lot of almonds and apples from the United States. But again, we are still talking about $1.4 billion, nothing in comparison to the sort of goods and their worth that we are talking about when it comes to the America-China trade war. Now, the duty on walnut, just to return to those items, was raised from 30% to 120%, while duty on chickpeas, Bengal gram, that is chana, and masoor dal, was hiked from 30% to 70%. They were effective immediately. California Senator Dianne Feinstein slammed Trump's new tariffs on India. She said, and I quote, California almond exports to India are worth more than $650 million a year. The president must stop damaging trade relations with our allies, unquote. Perhaps choosing almonds was a very specific move on the part of Donald Trump, considering he's not exactly a huge fan of the blue state that is California. It is predominantly Democratic and it is full of Hollywood people whose respect and love he desperately craves, and he doesn't get it, which is why he lashes out so much more. This is the behavior of a toddler, and he is demonstrating just that. But that is beside the point. That said, India's total benefits from GSP tariff exemptions amounted to $260 million in 2018. So if you were still part of that program, that is GSP, we stood to benefit about $260 million. This, according to data from the Office of the United States Trade Representative. The Indian reaction to Trump's GSP decision has been unusually mature and rather cool. An official release merely termed it unfortunate. As if, you know, you just ordered a latte at Starbucks and it was not hot enough. Unfortunate. That was the official response from India when this was announced. One New York Times estimate claimed that India exported $83.2 billion in goods and services to the United States in 2018, but just $5.6 billion benefited from the generalized system of preferences. The main industries affected will be textiles, jewelry, and auto parts. Piyush Goyal, Minister for Commerce and Industry in the new dispensation, seemed unperturbed. He said, and I quote, India will try to build up export competitiveness in its own right without depending on the GSP scheme provided by the US. It is not something that any of the exporters raised as a matter of life and death. It has had an impact on some sectors, some places, 1%, 2%. India is no more an underdeveloped or least developed country that we will look at that kind of support, unquote. Goyal's ministry put out a statement which reiterated, and I quote, we have significant development imperatives and concerns, and our people also aspire for better standards of living. This will remain the guiding factor in the government's approach, unquote. But India has sought to downplay any talk of antagonism. An official told the Economic Times, and I quote, we anticipate the US to ask us to sign some kind of a trade pact, and we should be prepared for that. This is not a trade war. He added, they might want to extract concessions on intellectual property rights and e-commerce, unquote. It is worth noting that US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will visit India for talks with his Indian counterpart, S. Jaishankar, early next week before the G20 summit. Priyanka Kishore, India head at Oxford Economics, wrote, and I quote, if the US chose to respond with retaliatory tariffs on labor-intensive exports, such as gems, jewelry, and textiles, or pushback on IT services, it would cause far more damage to India's economic outlook, unquote. Given the trade deficit, it is not difficult to see how such a retaliatory move could impact India. One perception from the other side is that Prime Minister Modi and his ministers responded with acts that illustrated their top priority as reinvigorating the Indian economy. The New York Times report claimed, and I quote, with farmers suffering across the country, the first act of the new cabinet was to extend a program of cash handouts to cover 20 million more farm workers, a sector that Trump wants to open to more competition from American growers. The second was to create a pension system for small traders, a group battered by competition from India's leading e-commerce sites, which are owned by American giants Amazon and Walmart, unquote. The question that we're also trying to ask today is, what does Trump want? Now, if only we knew. But there are some things that he truly does want. He wants to be thought of as wise and powerful and very intelligent and a great deal maker and a great negotiator. None of which actually play out in the way he behaves or in his talent toolkit, which is regrettably tiny. Besides Trump's stated desire of balancing trade deficits, the American administration is also seeking stronger protections for American intellectual property, lower tariffs on imported medical devices and electronics, the opening of India's markets to American dairy products, and an easing of India's recent protectionist measures against American technology and financial companies. Wilbur Ross, when he was in India, made a specific point about how data localization is not something that the US administration is truly happy about. One analysis on the Economic Times explained that the USA is also opposed to compulsory licenses being issued for manufactured copies of patented drugs to address situations conditions of national emergency as permitted by the global trade rules. India prohibits e-commerce companies with FDI, that is foreign direct investment, from selling products via firms in which they have an equity interest. It also bars them from making deals with sellers to sell exclusively on their platforms. We spoke about this about 6 months ago when these new rules came out. The policy change, which was in December 2018, had a direct bearing on Amazon and Walmart-owned Flipkart. The Americans also flagged concerns on India's draft e-commerce policy on data localization requirements, restrictions on cross-border data flows, transfer of intellectual property and proprietary source code, and preferential treatment for domestic digital products. In March of this year, Arvind Pangaria wrote in Foreign Policy that India's intellectual property rights regime has been a source of concern for the United States for some time now. Because of its restrictive patent law, the United States has placed India on the priority watch list of its Special 301 report. What is this report? It identifies countries that don't adequately protect intellectual property, and India has been placed on this particular list multiple times, including in 2017. Ashwini Mahajan, a leader of the Swadeshi Jagran Manch, which is of course a right-leaning organization with ties to the BJP, said, and I quote, "What the US is trying to do is bully India on certain issues where India cannot take a decision in favor of the United States," unquote. Harsh V. Pant, a professor of international relations at King's College London, is much more cynical. He said, and I quote, "Mr. Trump is ticking all the boxes basically. China done, Japan alerted, and now India. With this decision, Mr. Trump is getting into election mode," unquote. Shriram Cholia, Dean of the School of International Affairs at the O.P. Jindal Global University near New Delhi, said, and I quote, "The U.S. expectation is now that the election is over, Modi can do more on subsidies. The U.S. wants to be seen as militant on trade to appeal to the base of Trump. They are not backing down," unquote. The reason for that? Perhaps the American elections in November 2020. That is right. We are still a year away from Donald Trump finishing his first term in the White House. And we already saw 2 days ago when he launched his re-election campaign. He has been in office only for about 2.5 years, let's not forget. But it does feel like an eternity. And still, there's a long time left before this term comes to an end. But there are already moves, not just domestically, but also internationally, about what would make his chances better in re-election. So, some people believe that all of this brouhaha about trade is actually in service of that particular event in 2020. Biswajit Dhar, professor at the Center for Economic Studies and Planning in the School of Social Sciences at Jawaharlal Nehru University, yes, JNU, said, and I quote, "The US wants a trade agreement and it will be comprehensive. They could also put more pressure on us in WTO. Their insistence on reducing the trade deficit is posturing before the elections, and India should be cautious of any such pact," unquote. An expert from Escort Securities wrote on Money Control, and I quote, "President Trump's approach to any problem appears to be that of a shrewd businessman and one not concerned with diplomatic niceties or precedents. His standard tactic of unilaterally announcing the ending of long-standing agreements is designed to bring the other side to the negotiating table so that he can then wrest some benefits for his country. Even the ending of a waiver on oil imports was to force Iran to the negotiating table. Thus, it is possible that the benefits could be reinstated after India assures the USA at the negotiating table to provide equitable and reasonable access to its markets," unquote. The funny thing, though, is Modi campaigned on a nationalist platform and is under a bit of pressure from his backers to protect Indian companies and jobs, much like Trump himself, especially Swadeshi Jagran Manch. Every single time there is question of something being on sale comes up, they insist that it has got to be sold to Indian people. You remember that time from the Air India disinvestment time? They insisted that it cannot be taken over by any other foreign operating company. It has to be Indian, etc. So this is the kind of base that has actually brought Modi to power, and pro-America, America number one, America first kind of agenda is what has brought Trump to power in America. So the two of them are dealing with similar bases, and that is not demeaning, I think, to either of them. It's just identifying similarities between the bases that Trump and Modi each have. Now, due to this, the fact that, you know, Modi has to act to show that he's protecting Indian companies, Pangaria recommends that the United States appreciate how India's democratic system places certain limits on its leadership. He went on to explain like this. Sometimes New Delhi must accommodate political pressures that lead it to choose regulatory policies that are not to Washington's liking. In the interest of long-run partnership, it would be prudent to occasionally accommodate such behaviors. India's decision in 2016 to open up online marketplaces to foreign investors resulted in Amazon and Walmart emerging as the two largest e-commerce platforms. That in turn created political pressure to safeguard the interests of local small traders who form a key constituency of the present government. New Delhi responded by reversing some of the original liberalization, but the net outcome remains that the e-commerce sector is more open to foreign investors. Unquote. That is an approach Trump should understand this, considering this is very analogous to his own principle of putting America first. Further, as one analysis on Mint noted, the strain in trade ties between the two economies comes at a time when global economic growth rate is projected to slow down as trade tensions among major economies, such as between US and China, weigh on business confidence and investments. We also know that investor confidence in the markets, slightly unrelated note, has been at the lowest since the time of the global financial crisis. And global economic growth rate is slowing down, and recent reports on the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times have indicated that a major contributing factor to that is the trade war. In India, the RBI has also cautioned that weak global demand on account of escalating trade wars may further impact India's exports and investment activity. The CSO, that is the Central Statistics Office, had in February lowered its growth estimate for Asia's third largest economy for FY19 to 7% from the 7.2% estimated earlier. We also know that we have ceded the position of the fastest growing economy in the world to China already. So the repercussions of slowing global demand and also a slowing economic growth rate here in India are already being felt. The IMF's World Economic Outlook in April recently downgraded global growth to 3.3% for 2019 from the 3.5% that it had forecast in January. In a letter to the Trump administration last week, 661 companies warned that further tariffs on China would devastate the American economy, predicting the loss of 2 million jobs in the United States and $2,000 per year in added costs for the average American family. However, the Trump administration remains obdurate. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin insisted that the trade war is not dampening global growth or straining his country's economy. He told reporters, and I quote, "I don't think in any way that the slowdowns you're seeing in parts of the world are as a result of trade tensions at the moment." Unquote. Sure, Steven Mnuchin, I believe you. The U.S. has indicated a more flexible stance regarding India over the last week. At a U.S.-India Business Council meeting, Mike Pompeo said, and I quote, "We remain open to dialogue and we hope that our friends in India will drop their trade barriers and trust in the competitiveness of their own companies," unquote. Now, there are already related repercussions. The United States has told India it is considering caps on H-1B work visas for nations that force foreign companies to store data locally. This is obviously not related to the trade war, but it is sort of trade war adjacent. The plan to restrict the H-1B visa program, under which skilled foreign workers are brought to the United States each year, i.e. your brother, your sister, your brother-in-law, etc., has come just a few days ahead of Mike Pompeo's visit to New Delhi. India, which has upset companies like MasterCard and Visa, and has irritated the American government with these stringent new laws on data localization, is the largest recipient of these temporary visas, that is H-1B, most of them given to the big IT firms in the country. This warning from the United States are also a result of the trade tensions that we have seen between the US and India and the tit-for-tat sort of retaliations that we've been seeing in recent weeks. From Sunday, as I've just explained to you for about 20 minutes, India has imposed higher tariffs on some American goods. Let's also try to understand what is at stake. The United States gives out about 85,000 H-1B work visas each year, and about 70% of them go to Indians. And the US government is now saying that they're planning to cap it between 10 and 15%. India's IT sector is, of course, a thriving industry, $150 billion, and TCS and Infosys, which use H-1B visas to fly their engineers and coders and developers to service clients in the United States, are obviously going to be hurt by this particular move should it come to pass. So while this trade war, or call it whatever you will, has broader implications and how this will be negotiated under Modi 2.0, under a new external affairs minister, under a new foreign secretary, will be something to watch out for. We will, of course, be specifically keeping our eyes and ears peeled for Mike Pompeo's visit and what happens then. And, of course, I'll be here to tell you all about it. Do write into us, mcpodcast@nw18.com. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.